And the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Step outside of your comfort zone. See the world with a whole new perspective. Join us and experience the unexplained on The Paranormal View.
And welcome, everybody, right here to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight. It's been a very nice weekend here so far, and I'm sure that everybody's out enjoying it. So if you're not here, maybe people will drop back in a little later. We hope so. And I want to thank those listening from around the world. We appreciate each and every one of you. And if you are listening from somewhere else and you'd like to come over to the chat room and join everybody here, feel free to do so. Come to the Paranormal View.
Where are we?
I have no idea. Where am I at? Come to Para-X.com and we will get you right into the chat room. Man, I blew that one, didn't I? Real bad.
It's Para-X Radio Network.com/chat.
Yeah, but if they go to Para-X, they still find it. It goes to it.
Oh, does it? Really?
Yeah, it's direct link. So, but do that. If you got questions tonight, you can private chat them to Ceiling Cat, Jeffrey Gould, or myself. We will get those answered for you. And if you got questions and you're out somewhere else around the world, you can still ask a question by sending it to theparanormalview@gmail.com. Just put attention question and we will get those answered for you. Great show lined up for tonight. We have with us right now Jeffrey Gould.
Hello, hello.
And we got Barbara Duncan.
I am here.
And next week, we will be live at Mid-South.
Woo-hoo.
So there'll be lots and lots of people there. I will be trying to get as many people as I can to maybe stop by and be on the show. So I know the event itself knocks off about 6, I think it is. So hopefully they will want to come up to the room and do the show with us. So with that,
that just sounded a little more dirty than I think you meant to.
Yeah, I know. Come upstairs and do my radio show.
Well, that's what I said. Didn't I say that? Be on the show?
See my etchings.
I could have sworn I said that. But
be on the show. Is that what they're calling it these days, these kids?
Yeah. Do a show? I don't know. Anyway, tonight we got a great guest returning again, and we're going to let Jeff introduce him.
Yes. Well, tonight's returning guest is the wonderful voiced Tom Wertman, the former teacher at the American National University. He's state director at MUFON and co-director at Cleveland Ufology Project. And Thomas has learned to read people when it comes to interviewing UFO witnesses and abductees, having studied business human resources at Kaplan University. And who can answer questions put to them by Thomas's wonderful voiceover level voice. So welcome again back, Thomas Wertman.
Thank you. Oh, by the way, I wasn't an instructor at American National. I was actually the dean.
Were you the dean?
Yeah,
you were the what?
Yeah, I was a dean at American National, and when I went to one of their meetings, what does everybody do around this table? And when they got down to me, I kind of got these unusual stares, and they said, "We already know all about you." And I kind of thought I had on a Jeffrey this big bullseye painted on my chest, and it wasn't long after that we separated.
This is information I got from one of your bio pages, so I guess somebody wrote teacher instead of dean.
Oh, well, that's probably, yeah, who knows where that came from. But that's the fact, anyway.
And speaking of that, have they done much upgrading on your MUFON site yet?
That would be a no.
Oh.
We're actually working on getting ready for putting our conference information on there now. We're going to be hosting a conference in September. And I've got, in this case, David Marler coming in this year, who's a great individual, a tremendous amount of knowledge on triangular-shaped UFOs. He's going to be speaking here in September, September 16th to be exact. And we got Irina Scott, who's also a local Ohio person who worked for Battelle Industries at one time doing defense work. And she's also going to be one of our speakers. So we're starting to put a good lineup together for this fall. But that's the only really update we've done on there, to be honest with you. Other than that, it still looks like a DOS-based program, I hate to say.
Where's it going to be held at?
It's going to be actually in Dublin, Ohio, down center part of the state.
Oh.
We made a transition this year from the Sheriff's Department in Ashland, Ohio, down to Dublin. I thought, let's make it a little bit more centered, give it more access for everybody all around the state.
And do you know what the date is on that?
September 16th. It's a Saturday. It's going to be pretty much an all-day event.
I won't be there. September the 16th, I will be in Fort Mifflin.
Oh, thanks. I come on your show, and you look what you do to me, huh? yeah, that's understandable. I don't blame you.
Yeah, we're having a big horror at the fort with Para X. It's open to the public, but it costs, I don't know, $45, something like that, for the whole day. And a lot of people from Para X is going to be there, show hosts and stuff, and you can come meet them. And then I'll be doing the show live Saturday night there. And then they'll be doing investigations. So.
Sounds like a great time.
It should be, hopefully. Ah. And so those are just a couple of the things that I've got lined up, going to be doing. So we got lots. Barbara had sent out a thing for some topics. And I've already got people that sent in questions already, too, from the chat room. Ooh. So we'll get to those in a little bit. But some of this stuff, when I started looking up to go a different way with the UFOs, kind of, there's a lot of stuff in here that we're going to have questions about. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to just go ahead and let Barbara get started.
Well, yeah, well, part of the reason I wanted to talk about this tonight was, and it's come up in several social media events when scientists start talking about they may have discovered a 10th planet outside the Neptune's orbit, I believe. And everybody kept saying, well, you know, we can see these planets on in other galaxies. Why can't we see another planet in our own solar system? And you kind of have to explain to them that space is a 360-degree circle, and you can't cover everything at once. And it's kind of that way with UFOs. I mean, they can be coming in, or asteroids, comets, whatever. You're never going to be able to see them all unless you're pointing right your telescope right at it.
And you happen to catch it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they actually have their lights on. Oh, wait.
Or reflected light, yeah. The landing light thing is always, yeah, kind of odd. But they're not even seeing the planet yet, but they can see distortions and different orbits around certain things, so they can't see.
The gravitational perturbations, as it's called?
Distortions of the asteroids around that area. So it's kind of fascinating to me that, you know, we keep telling people that, you know, we can't see everything at once, and sometimes that killer asteroid is going to be 2 days away before anybody sees it.
Yeah. Surprise!
Yeah, you wouldn't have time to get your stuff ready, will you?
Kind of better that way, in a way.
I'd agree with you on that. I mean, I think it'd be a lot better not to know until the last second.
Then you got time to say, oh, crap.
That's right. That's right. Think of the bills I didn't pay, you know, and if I was worried about stuff, you know.
Or if you know a week in advance, don't pay your bills and just live.
There you go. Exactly. You got that right.
100%. Go down, get you a brand new car and new home. Well, if you need a home, just get you a new car.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
You know, as they say, you know, if you think nobody's really pays attention to you, just stop your payments for a month.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Well, now, you know, if you look in a book at our solar system, when you look at it the way the drawings are, it looks like that all the planets going around the sun are all on the same little
line. They're not.
Kind of. Well, it depends. But yeah, it depends on the book too, because I've seen books where they have the tilted orbit.
Well, most of them don't. It just looks like they're all in the same little path, kind of.
Yeah, and they're all within, you know, stone throw distance.
Right.
Throw, yeah. Right. They're all kind of like in the same plane is basically what it amounts to.
Yeah.
And I think if they show anything, maybe they show about, what is it, maybe about a 6-degree tilt off of the axis of the sun, mm-hmm. something like that the most, or the sun tilted about 6 degrees, something like that, if I remember correctly.
Something like that, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
But no, it's not that way at all. And, you know, even trying to explain to somebody the difference and why you don't have an eclipse every full moon is because of that tilt, the Earth's axis, et cetera. So, you know, and we start to get landing lights aside, trying to identify objects in the night sky. It's going to be very, very difficult. Objects in the daytime, and I know that there are daytime UFOs, but objects in the night sky have to be even more difficult.
Exactly. I mean, you're talking about identifying, you know, where that's at. And I understand that plant they're looking for is what they've found is kind of like a cluster of like about six mm-hmm. objects in a region out there that they think may have been kind of associated with like a gravitational pull of something huge, maybe like a Neptune-sized planet or something like that, and it's kind of being attracted right to that region. But they're not seeing anything visual. But, I mean, if you think about it, they're searching an area. Let's see. Is it the moon takes up about a half a degree, something like that, if you look out at it? They're searching an area like 400 times greater than that for something way out there that's almost invisible, basically. So it's going to be a real challenge to find it.
And they say that it might be 10 times the size of the Earth. So it's kind of, and it's out past the sun's reflectivity area from Earth's standpoint anyway.
Well, you know, maybe those aliens on that planet has a cloaking device so we can't see them.
Stop reading my mind. I was about to say that. God, he does. It's been a while since Henry's done that. I'm about to make something, you know, relatively funny. I'm like, oh, well, maybe. And then he says it. I'm like,
maybe they just turned off all their lights, you know?
Well, that's what I was saying before, but that's what I was saying. You know,
maybe they didn't pay their bill.
Exactly. That's why we're pointing them out now.
But I think it's really interesting in how they kind of theorize that this planet's there. I mean, from what I've read about it, I mean, they've come up with proposed mathematical models in the past, but they're saying something like a rogue planet, maybe like at a 30-degree slant off of the plane, I guess you could say, of all the other planets' rotations, would have caused the sun to, like, slant at a 6-degree tilt itself, kind of like it's being pulled up a little bit, I guess you could say, on an angle on there. And they've run all these mathematical equations. I think they ran like 160 tests or something, like found out. And they said that everything is pointing to the fact that this is very plausible on there. I mean, I was in school studying Pluto as a planet. And then they took that away from us, you know.
Well, we all know it's really a planet.
Yeah. And I love that episode of Big Bang Theory where Sheldon blamed Neil deGrasse Tyson for that.
That was fun.
You took it away. Well, I agree with Mrs. Scott, my sixth grade teacher. It's still a planet. It's still there, you know?
Exactly. There are T-shirts out there pointing that out, like, you know, poor Pluto all by itself and all the other, you know, planets are looking at them like, oh, you don't belong to the club anymore kind of attitude. And,
But so some of the technologies we've got coming up, I hope that they find something out there in that region. I really do.
But from what I understand, wasn't there a mathematician in the Middle Ages who calculated the mathematical distances between the planets? And the only thing that seemed wrong was that there wasn't something between Earth and Mars. And they realized, well, you got the asteroid belt that's there, and that's has the mass, so it may have been a planet that broke up. So that all of these distances were correct, and Pluto falls in that correct thing. It may be a planetoid or a huge asteroid. It's got two moons, for crying out loud. So I don't know why they say, you know, it's small. So that's like saying, you know, Peter Dinklage, you're short. You're not a human.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you're taking it away just because it's small? Come on.
Yeah, I think I'm one of the shortest ones in our family. So,
plus, you don't want to tick off, you know, something that's named after the god of the underworld, because you show up afterwards, you're like, did you say that Pluto wasn't a planet? You know, so it won't go over well.
Well, what kind of got started on this was thinking about amateur astronomers, because a lot of our new planets, comet that broke up and landed into Jupiter was found by a pair of amateur astronomers. And I'm wondering if you ever get calls to MUFON from amateur astronomers going, this isn't...
You know, I haven't gotten any calls personally from amateur astronomers on there, but I do happen to be a member of the Richland County Astronomical Society. And we've got one of the bigger telescopes, amateur telescopes in the country. They've got like a 37-inch reflector telescope down in Belleville, Ohio. A beautiful facility down there. And they've got, it's a tremendous facility. They do a lot of education down there. And I've got to really get with some of the guys separately to find out what they've really looked at on there. But we've got some serious researchers down there who do a great job. But they haven't told me about anything that they've, you know, seen along those lines through the telescopes. They've told me about other sightings they've had, but nothing related to something through the telescopes.
Well, does astronomers ever see anything in their telescopes pertaining to UFOs, maybe?
Nobody's come forward to me. That's because when I got a hold of the group, they actually reached out to me. I think it's like 5 years ago now, something like that, to see if I would come in and do a talk on UFOs. Ooh. And I'm like, ooh, this is going to be interesting because these people sometimes are more skeptical. I don't know how this is going to go over. And I went in, did a talk, and actually found they were very receptive overall. I mean, you had a few, of course, dissenters like in every group. Some just didn't come. Some kind of sat back and probably chuckled under their breath. But I try to present things in a scientific manner. And I tell people what I know, I tell people what I don't know or what I'm unsure of on there. And I think they like that idea of the openness. I talked about some major cases around Ohio. And then once we got done, we all kind of went our separate ways. But what was interesting is I had three different people come up to me. And it wasn't through telescopes. It was actually through binoculars most of them were seeing things. The president of the club at that time said, you know, I was laying outside one night in a lawn chair just watching the sky late at night. She goes, didn't need a telescope. I just got out some astronomical binoculars, and I see this large triangle passing overhead. And it was completely black, and she could see it in the outline of the stars behind it. It was passing over. And in her mind, without a doubt, it was a solid object. It wasn't a cloud, anything like that. But it was just this huge triangular craft moving very slowly across the sky. Now, I had at the same weekend event, two other people basically come up and tell me almost identical stories. Now, it didn't happen at the same time. They were separate times. But they were saying same thing. Late at night, they're out observing, and they all saw triangular craft, not through binoculars, but in this case, or, I mean, through telescopes, but through binoculars at the very most.
Mm. Is mm-hmm. it the lens, the range?
I think it goes back to the range because, I mean, if you think about it, the telescopes are designed for more distance out there.
Right.
And if you get something in much closer and it's going to be traveling, the thing is you got to be able to track it.
And with a big telescope, that's hard to do.
Yeah. And as a kid growing up, I mean, I remember starting out with like a 3-inch telescope. I mean, I thought it was, oh, I'm the kid on the block. I've got a telescope. It's got a 3-inch reflecting mirror in it. Which isn't much anymore to these days. And I found out how hard it was for a kid to try to focus this thing and aim it at something, especially when you've got an object, just something as simple as the moon traveling across the sky. Now, picture you've got something much more powerful. Like right now, I've got an 8-inch telescope, and I've got a motorized unit on it to help keep track of something like the moon going across the sky. Even locating something, I don't have it, but a lot of the group members have GPS devices built into their telescopes that can actually track a portion of the sky of what they're going to be looking at. So it aims the telescope for them.
Right.
Now, picture trying to track an object going across the sky by yourself, by hand. To me, it's going to be, unless you can really lock onto it somehow, it's going to be next to impossible on there.
And not only that, you also have to estimate the speed to be able to track.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, you've got a fast moving object potentially changing course on top of that. So, I mean, that's where I think they have a lot of the issues at with things in along those lines, just trying to track something. And that's why I think maybe binoculars, something handheld you can move much easier, is a lot better source on there.
Well, it's like the old adage of some like a sentry in an old style castle who only has a slit for like to shoot through which to shoot arrows. And if you have a horseman go by, you can hear the clock, but if you blink, it can go by and you don't see it.
Exactly. I think it's a good comparison on there. I mean, it just happens so quick.
Now, do you know, are there active groups out there that simply go out at night with binoculars and do nothing but stare at the sky and try to find UFOs?
What a coincidence you mentioned that. I talked to Henry earlier, and I said the group I'm with tonight, or with right now, the Cleveland group, Cleveland Ufology Project, we're having a meeting tonight. And he texted me a couple days ago saying, hey, can you come on a show? Well, tonight we're having our own stargazing event, and we do it once a year. What we do is we get together the whole group as an organization. We've had 25, 30 people show up at the skygazing events. And what we do is we find as much as we can, a remote state park close to us here in northern Ohio, which we've got one located. I don't give out where it's at because people will show up potentially out there and maybe try to hoax some things to get us to see something.
Oh.
But we'll be out there primarily with binoculars looking to see if we can see something going on. What I take with me, I already had some maps made of the sky using a program called Stellarium, which shows me celestial objects like Jupiter, etc., different stars out there. And that way, in the celestial object we're looking at, I've also got a listing of all the major satellites going over this evening, the time frames, the directions, everything involved behind them. And we're going to use it as a stargazing event, but also see if we can see something unusual like a UFO. It helps to take all the other data with me to say, sorry, you're not seeing a UFO. You're actually seeing the Hubble Space Telescope going over or something like that. But we did this a couple of years ago under Barbara, and I couldn't explain all the things it did go over. I mean, I could identify a number of them, like, okay, this is an aircraft because I've got flight tracking software on my iPhone. But certain things did not pop up. Now, I'm not saying that they weren't terrestrial of some sort, because maybe it was an aircraft that wasn't listed or a satellite that wasn't listed, but we did see a few unusual things out there.
Mm-hmm. I know, I don't know, it's earlier this year sometime. It was early spring. They were saying, you know, if you go outside, you can see the space station go over, and they said it's going from the northeast over to southwest or something like that, or somewhere. Now, anyway, I looked out the window and I seen moving. Went outside and watched it as it went right on over. Couldn't see it up close, but you could. It's like a nice sized star is what it looked like traveling.
Oh, it's brilliant without a doubt. I mean, you can get apps for your iPhones and other Android devices out there, which will show you the schedule of it coming over your region. We don't have it, I think, over here until like in the morning, maybe about 5 a.m, something like that coming around. And it's going to be low on the horizon. But when you see it come directly over,
yeah,
I mean, it is brilliant.
Yep, sure is.
And we get reports on that a lot. One case I worked, about 5 years ago, something like that now. An individual who is a amateur photographer took a picture at night. And the picture he took was a fantastic picture. I mean, excellent quality on there. And here's this object, brilliant object in the sky. Well, I went back and took my astronomy software. And I set it up for the exact time and date that he took a photograph. And it showed the International Space Station was exactly where he was taking a photograph of. Oh. And what was really wild about that was I overlaid the computer-generated model on top of his photograph, and it was a dead match.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, that's impressive. That was cool. I mean, I was proud of myself on that one, you know?
No,
I'll give one of these questions from the chat room. They want to know, are UFO reports mostly day or night sightings?
The biggest share of reports we get are night. And I just think really it goes back to a lot of times in daytime, people are distracted by everything else going around them. I mean, if I'm in my car, I have to watch so I'm not on my cell phone. Trying to do 20 other things. No, I'm not texting. Well, yeah, I am sometimes. I'm Jeffrey, but you know, but trying to watch doing things like that, we're distracted. In the evening, if I'm out at night, I'm more likely to see something in the sky. Now, in Ohio, we did have a case come in within the last week or so that's still under investigation yet, so I can't give much information on it. But it was a daytime sighting at about 3:45, if I'm correct, in the afternoon. It's where an individual is driving home, and he looked out his window, and he's in farm country. He's down around the Dayton area, I believe, out in that area, Henry, someplace down in there. And he sees a cube-shaped object about 8 to 10 feet across that has a pattern on it, almost like a checkerboard pattern of light and kind of like gray and black squares on it. And this thing is hovering over the field. And he's driving by. What was interesting about the case is he drives by, he sees this thing, he goes, wow, check that out, you know? What the heck is that? And he can't figure out what he's looking at, but for some reason, he never stops to turn around. He just keeps driving right home. And then once he gets in the driveway, he's kind of like, what the heck did I just do, you know? I see this UFO hovering over a field. This is really unusual, and for some reason, I keep on driving and never stop and go back to check it out.
Wow.
Yeah. But we do get cases, but that type of case is very rare that you get something that somebody is that close.
Maybe he didn't realize he was getting a telepathic message like, nothing to see here, keep driving.
Well, you know, that's a thought, to be very honest with you. I mean, yeah, it is funny, but there is a degree of truth to that, maybe. Yeah. That maybe he said, just move along. Keep on moving. Don't stop and enjoy the sight. Just keep on going right on home. Remember your wife, once she's got dinner ready, get out of here.
Huh. And no telling what they would have been hovering over a field for, whether it was they was replenishing some of their water or whatever it was they might have needed.
You don't know.
Samples, yeah.
Soil samples, you know, biological samples of some any sort. Who knows, you know?
Yeah.
Trying to figure out our new crop circle.
That's it. Or maybe just had to stop and go to the bathroom after so many millions of miles, you know. But most all the sightings we get are in the evening. And the highest percentage of those two go back to lights in the sky, brilliant lights. That's probably accounts for maybe half of what we get in, something like that. is to bring it lights in the sky.
I was just going
to
bring up, there's a 75% chance of some pretty strong G3 class storms from this last solar flare that we just did. Do you see a spike in reports of UFO activity after solar flares?
We'll get some spikes on there. The exact percentage, I couldn't say. I've never gone back and calculated it. But after certain celestial events like that, we will get a potential increase on there due to those. I'd have to go back and check that out now that you mentioned it to me. I'm making a note right now to look at it to see if we get reported reports. But,
Well, of course, the auroras are due to excitement of different particles. It's hydrogen and nitrogen, I think. Do you think it illuminates or has something to do with our ability to see UFOs that we wouldn't normally be able to see?
That part I don't know, to be honest with you. I've got to be honest with you. I don't know. But the biggest thing I was just doing on here is I was putting a correlation back into times of year. Like right now, more people are out during the summertime. And now is when our reports go up. Like July, we've already got twice as many reports this month as what we had the previous months on there. And a lot of that's just going back to our better weather right now. But I've got to go back and double check everything you just gave to me tonight. And I'll have that ready maybe sometime if I come back in the future on there, we can go back to.
Okay. Cater in the chat room said solar flares cause storms. You want to let him know what kind of storms it causes?
Oh, it's just solar storms. The flares eject out a coronal mass emission, and it's like a solar wind which hits the Earth, which excites, I believe it's hydrogen and nitrogen in the atmosphere, so that you get the different colors. And green, I think, is hydrogen excitement, and red is nitrogen, or hydrogen. I can't remember which color excites at different levels. So, and blue is another color, I believe, that goes in there. So it just depends on what gets excited by the solar EMF activity.
Yeah, it does play havoc, I guess, on people using EMF detectors and stuff. It does put a spike on that.
For gamma reading and... You know, and any satellite we have in orbit, if it's a strong enough solar flare, also causes electronic outages as far as telecommunications go. So.
Yeah, and that part I've seen on there, some of the very high solar flares on there. I've had problems in the past sometimes of like radio communication and other things along those lines that we've detected on there.
What it does to humans, I don't know.
Oh, gamma radiation makes Hulks. Oh, wait.
Bruce
no.
Banner loves him.
Exactly.
Let's see.
But has it been known to attract or change the radar? I mean, I know that you also, when you get a UFO case or a call in, somebody obviously checks with the local airports, et cetera, to look and see if there's radar, if there's a plane or something goes in there. I don't know how much it affects radar.
Radar, well, see, I don't even use the radar. What I've got is in my office right behind me, I've got a small receiver that I pick up the transponders of aircraft in my region. And when I pick up their signals going over, it transmits my information back to like this huge database collection group. And there's who knows how many thousands of people around the world that have these same receivers I do. And what they do is they make that information available on the internet. And I've got free access to all the information going back a year. And when we get things, in this case, like going overhead, I go in my website and I'm going to go back up to a year and say was anything that had like a transponder going over my region. And it really helps me out without having to go through to get radar invasion. Because a lot of times what's going to happen, Barbara, if you go to get it, you've got to submit a Freedom of Information request to get that stuff. they aren't necessarily that forthcoming and say, oh, by the way, yeah, we did have something overhead that was unusual. They normally don't give that much information out.
Yeah.
Kind of like a connected story to it. Here's an unusual thing is one of my people tries to get information. And first of all, they saw a UFO and they called the local police. Local police referred them to the local airport, which was Akron-Canton Regional Airport. Akron-Canton Regional Airport refers them to Oberlin Tower, which is up by Cleveland, which is the air traffic control area. They don't give her any information at all. What it is, they gave her an 800 number to Robert Bigelow Aerospace.
Okay.
Out in Las Vegas.
Yeah, because he kind of, isn't that the guy who kind of like tried or did buy up MUFON or something?
Yeah,
so
well,
that he could
get all
the information?
I don't know if buy is the right word, but maybe it's not too far removed.
Stole.
But what he was doing is he was giving funds to MUFON to help do investigations.
Yeah.
And what they would use that money for is if a high-profile case came in, you would have funds available. If you needed like special equipment or if you needed to travel to a certain place, that fund would be available on there. I never saw anything in Ohio come through our area, but some other states did get funds from him. And he had allocated, I forget how much money, was it $250,000 or so, something like that, over a year for research. And I don't know how much access he got, if he got access to our database or what for his, you know, contribution on there. If he did, he could potentially be looking up, you know, cases going on. There was a report an individual up in our region was contacted by him before MUFON hardly even knew about the case, a sighting that he had over the Cleveland area. Well, Bigelow is very, very big on research. He was on 60 Minutes back, I believe, in March, where they asked him, you know, what he thought about basically alien life. He says, without a doubt, it exists. He says, they exist now. They exist in the presence. And he's just totally believes that they are here. And he says, I probably spent more money as a private individual than anybody else in the United States researching this area. And here's a guy that runs a private aerospace company. And his division, I believe it's called the Advanced Technologies Division, I believe what's called, is when my friend called that 800 number, they said, this is Bigelow Advanced Aerospace Technologies Division. And what they were trying to do is collect data on her report.
Huh.
So they could do research or investigations, I guess, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I know you've probably seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which my understanding that opening sequence was based on a true story where you had police officers following UFOs going across state lines from, I think it was Indiana into Ohio. Is there chatter like that on radio?
Well, that case you're talking about happened really only about 50 miles from me.
Really?
What Steven Spielberg did is he based on the case which occurred in 1966 in Portage County, Ohio, that involved two deputy sheriffs. To give you a little background on the case, what happened on there is these two deputy sheriffs were out at very early in the morning. And there had been an accident in their region, so they went out to check on the accident. If memory serves me correct, they volunteered to go back and get some coffee for a line crew that was working on the electric. And they come back with the coffee, of course, probably donuts too, I don't know. But they come back with the coffee heading back that direction, and they see this car pull over along the side of the road that appeared abandoned. And it was kind of a rural area. It was over by Atwater, Ohio. And they turn around and pull up behind this car, and they come out to do a routine check. And when they get out of the car, the deputy, I guess you could say maybe the deputy in charge, his name was Dale Spar, he gets up and he comes up beside the driver's side window, And there's one report where he kind of reached out and kind of went to grab hold of the door of the car and kind of got a shock off it, but there was nobody in the car. His the deputy with him was named Neff. This is a great part of the story. His partner's name was Barney. So here we have a deputy sheriff named Barney getting out of the side of the car, and he comes up along the passenger side like, you know, normal officers would do. And Spar looks behind him, and he sees this object coming in a distance. And it's coming slowly, and it's getting bigger, it's getting bigger, it's getting bigger. And it passes directly over him. And in the movie Close Encounters, how you kind of saw that scene where the light's shining down as this object's going over. Richard Dreyfuss looks out the window, and he takes off after it. Well, this object passes directly over the deputies. And Spar kind of looks at Neff, you know, and they kind of have this thing like this major aha moment, or if you to keep the language clean, they're like, what do we do next? So they hop back in their car, they get on the radio, and they contact their controllers, and they say, we just saw this object pass overhead. And they said, you know, do you have a camera? No. Well, stay there, and we'll send a camera out to take a photograph. And they're like, this thing is moving. It's going down the road, just like in Close Encounters. So what do? Heck, we're not waiting on a camera. We take off and we go after it. And they chase that UFO roughly about 88 miles into Pennsylvania. I mean, they were going at speeds up to 100 miles an hour down these country roads trying to keep up with this thing. But interesting thing about this, and you'd probably pick up on this, Jeffrey, these were very, very considerate aliens. I mean, they're driving down this road, up speeds up 100 miles an hour, and all of a sudden, to come up to an intersection, they got to slow down. This thing slows down.
Aww.
So it's like either how considerate are they, or they're like, oh, we don't want to lose these guys. We're having too much fun, you know?
Well, it's also you don't want to be T-boned when you're, you know, buzzing an alien planet, too.
So. You know? So, I mean, this thing slows down. And under Spar's opinion, I mean, he said that whatever was inside this thing, it appeared to be under intelligent control.
Yep.
But it goes all the way into Pennsylvania before it eventually leaves. At the same time, they're basically out of gas, and they had to borrow money to get back to Ohio.
And these craft followed the roads?
They followed not exactly the roads, but it stayed relatively close to it. I mean, it kept going down. They kept jogging down different roads along the way to keep following it. And even other officers joined in following areas. It was over by Columbiana County, or Columbiana County, I believe it was, which is clear on the east side of Ohio. They had some officers pick it up. Also, when they got into Pennsylvania, there were other officers over there that kind of saw the same object. And there's kind of vague information about it being picked up on radar, but there were reports of jets being scrambled out of Pittsburgh to try to intercept this thing before it left. But it's one of those very, very strong cases from Ohio that to me is probably one of the top couple best.
Yeah.
And the embarrassing part is when you get back to it and they Project Blue Book was in existence back. And when they sent their investigators out, the investigator's name was Major Quintanilla. He came out and he talked to Spar for a short time and he basically said, the guys are chasing Venus, you know, that's what they were after.
Venus.
Yeah, Venus. Yeah, Venus slows down.
Yeah.
Venus speeds back up. Venus comes from one side, goes directly over him. In Spar's own words, when he was looking up the thing, he said it was as big as a house. And he said it was like looking down the gates of hell, as how bright it was.
Wow.
Now, I don't remember anything, you know, like a satellite in the 1960s, or Venus for that matter, in the 1960s, 66, being so bright, it was like looking down the gates of hell and passing directly over you. And one of my friends was at a meeting where he talked about it. And Spar held his arms out at complete arm's length and said it was like this going over me. Now, Venus normally doesn't look as wide as what your arms are spread out going over top of your head.
Right, it's a little white dot.
Yeah, and when local community people got involved with it, one of them happened to be a judge from the region, I believe it was, judge, and there's maybe a congressman got involved. They responded in Spar's defense, saying, no, this guy's not nuts. We believe him with this story. They recontacted Blue Book. They got Quintanilla back involved, and he really didn't change his story much. But I've heard things that later on in life, he came out, he wanted to know more information about it. But that case destroyed their lives. You know how kind of like Richard Dreyfuss, kind of his life fell apart? These deputies, of course, got ridiculed by their coworkers. I know a friend of mine happened to be working that same county as a deputy sheriff years later, a couple years later, to be exact. And he said when he hired in, they said, if you ever see a UFO, you're not allowed to chase it out of the county. And you picture, I mean, if they're making jokes like that internally, how bad would it be kind of like in the locker room being made fun of?
Oh, yeah.
By your coworker. I mean, it could be totally brutal. I mean, Spar got out of being a deputy sheriff. He moved to West Virginia. He came back to Ohio and ran a bar, the last I knew, until he passed away.
Yeah.
And I've actually got photographs of his gravesite because a friend of mine is writing a book on it. And he asked me to go out and track it down. And he died back in the 90s on there, if I remember correctly, 96 or something like that. But it totally destroyed his whole life. And he said, if that thing is like he never wanted to see it.
Yeah, that's just like a lot of people say that they believe that there's UFOs or aliens or whatever. But when you tell somebody that you've seen one, they are naturally not going to believe you. Well, you don't got a picture. You don't do this. You don't do that. So then they're, even though they say they believe, they aren't going to believe you.
Yeah, there's that stage of ridicule. It's not as bad as it was years and years ago. I mean, I could just picture back in the 60s. Now, I mean, I've told people that I've seen objects or been involved in things, and I don't get least ridicule in my face, maybe because I'm 6'4", about 270.
Yeah, really.
And sometimes that may, you know, kind of intimidate them a tiny bit, you know, to keep from saying, but, or maybe it's just out of respect, you know, or maybe they may think I'm psycho. That's why they don't want to say anything.
Well, what I normally point out, and I mention this on Twitter a lot, I play hashtag games, and when I can use this, I sometimes do, I point out that it's very arrogant for someone to say, there's no such thing as ghosts. I mean, Ricky Gervais will say that in a heartbeat, and I just want to smack him upside the head. I'm like, okay, it's not about that there's no such thing as ghosts is, the true accurate statement to make is, I have never personally had a paranormal experience. And the same goes with UFOs. I've never seen one, but there's enough anecdotal and documented evidence to know there's something out there, whether they're aliens or not is, you know, arguable or debatable.
Sure.
But, you know, there's something.
And you're 100% right. I mean, I have not seen a ghost per se, but I know my sister and my mother have talked about having experiences along those paranormal lines.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't ridicule them, even though their family, I looked at what they said and said, wow, this is interesting. This is unusual, you know?
Yeah. And that's the same with, well, like I say, I've never seen a ghost, but I've heard stuff. My experiences have been auditory. Henry has actually seen something. He keeps forgetting that it's actually something he's seen, and he keeps saying he just hasn't seen a ghost. We say, yeah. But yeah. That was the thing I was going to say was if you're in court and you're under oath and you say, I saw so-and-so go in and they stabbed so-and-so and they died, we're like, okay, well, we can send this person to jail. But if you go in the same person saying, and I once saw you, if they say, well, did you ever see a UFO? And you say, well, yeah. Oh, okay. Well, you're no longer a credible witness. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. Well, look what happened to Dennis Kucinich back during the elections against Obama. Obama did that to him.
That he had seen a UFO or something?
Yeah, Dennis Kucinich admitted he'd seen a UFO.
So now, Bill Clinton.
Yeah.